Hare Krishna. Welcome back to the Nectar of Instruction. Today now we are entering deep into the heart of Gaudiya Vaishnava teachings, where we will discuss about the residence in the holy dham and complete absorption in the advanced stages of devotion. So let us look at the verse and then we'll move forward and look at the purport. तन्नाम रूप चरितादि सुकीर्तनानु स्मृत्योः क्रमेण रसना मनसि नियोज्य तिष्ठन् व्रजे तदनुराग जनानुगामी कालम नयेद अखिलम इत्युपदेश सारम. सो तन्नाम रूप चरितादि सुकीर्तनानु, दैट तन् रिफर्स टू दैट एब्सोल्यूट ट्रूथ, दैट लॉर्ड कृष्णा, हिज नेम फॉर्म एंड कैरेक्टर. One engages oneself in sukirtananu, nicely engaging oneself in doing glorification of that. And smrityaho, so anusmrityaho refers to systematically cultivating the remembrance. And kramena rasana manasi niyojya, so kramena means progressively. One engages one's tongue and one engages one's mind, niyojya, engaging. And how should one do? Tishthan vraje, one situates oneself in Vrindavan dham. Tad anuragi means those who are having anurag for Lord Krishna, those who are attached to Lord Krishna. Tad anuragi jana, so those people, those devotees, exalted devotees who are attached to Lord Krishna, anugami, one becomes their followers. And in this way, kalam nayed akhilam, one should spend all of one's time absorbed in engaging one's mind and one's tongue in the service of Krishna. Iti upadesh saram, this is the essence of all advice. So in a sense, this verse completes the upadesh of Upadeshamrut. After this, afterwards it's almost like there is a phala shruti. Not so much Shruti, but the glorification of Vraja. So it just talks about how fortunate one is who can stay in Vraja. And then it talks about Govardhan and Radha of Vrindavan, Govardhan, Radha Kund, which we'll discuss in future classes. But the Upadesha part of Upadeshamrut more or less ends with this verse. And that's why Upadesha Saram, the essence of all advice, is said to be this. So let us look at Srila Prabhupada's translation. The essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time, 24 hours a day, in nicely chanting and remembering the Lord's divine name, transcendental form, qualities and eternal pastimes, thereby gradually engaging one's tongue and mind. In this way, one should reside in Raja, Golok Vrindavan Dham, and serve Krishna under the guidance of devotees. One should follow in the footsteps of the Lord's beloved devotees, who are deeply attached to his devotional service. So the essence of all advice, Upadesha Saram, Prabhupada translates that as full-time engagement, 24 hours a day in devotional service, following in the footsteps of a great Rajvasi in Vrindavan. So let us look at what Srila Prabhupada says in his purport. So he starts with the basics for us and helps us move forward from those basics. So first point Srila Prabhupada starts his purport is, he focuses kramena rasana manasi niyojya. So manasi, he focuses a lot on the mind, and he explains that what do we have to do? We have to train the mind. So there are two aspects to training, why to train and how to train. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that the Krishna consciousness movement is especially meant to train the mind. And this is a radical statement if you think about it. This doesn't come in one of the seven purposes of ISKCON, that we want to train the mind of people. But then, whatever is to be achieved, whatever the purposes of ISKCON, to help to teach people about God, Krishna systematically, to distribute literature, to erect a place for dedicated transcendental pastimes of the Lord, to bring people together to a simpler life, which is centered more on God. So all that actually involves changing the way people think, and that is training of the mind. So the primary contribution of the Krishna consciousness movement is not humanitarian. It is not offering, say, food relief, although that also devotees do it through the ISKCON food relief program. But primarily, the focus is to train the mind. And the training of the mind is what the yoga is essentially supposed to do. When we say yoga, means to connect the soul with Krishna. Now, how is the connection done? It is not a physical connection that we use rivets and screws to tighten. It is a connection which is based on a reorientation of the mind. The mind is disconnected. Mind wants to stay disconnected from Krishna because it is attracted to material things. So training the mind means that we get the mind to again become connected with Krishna. And when we get the mind to become inclined to Krishna, attracted to Krishna, and once we are attracted to Krishna, then naturally the perfection of yoga is attained because we will be able to connect ourselves with Krishna. So in 7.1 also Krishna says, Mai asakta manaha partha yogam yunjan madashriyaha. So the purpose of yogam yunjan, the purpose of practicing yoga is Mai asakta manaha, to get the mind to become attached to Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada's purport focuses on the mind, and he says a special purpose of the Krishna conscious movement is to train the mind. So we can divide the purport in two parts, why to train and how to train. So we'll focus largely on why to train, and we'll discuss briefly about Prabhupada talks about training here, he talks a lot about training at the advanced levels of devotion, which we'll discuss briefly, but we'll also discuss at a practical level, at our stage in spiritual advancement, what we can do to train the mind. So why do we train? The first point is, Prabhupada explains that the mind can be our friend or our enemy. So, because the mind can act in both ways, if we want our own good, then we need to train the mind so that it will act as our friend. Otherwise, the mind will make us do things which will lead to our own ruination. So, many people often talk about their own demons. Some sports star who has a lot of talent and a lot of potential, but somehow at the key moments chokes. That means becomes nervous and is not able to perform right at the key moments. Sports star may say that, no, I have a lot of demons and the demons are tormenting me. Now they don't really think there in terms of demons when they say some creatures with horns coming out of their head and teeth coming out of their mouth. There they basically say that there's something within me which is dragging me down. What is that something? So that something actually is the mind, and the anartha is infecting the mind. So the mind can often act as our enemy. And why does it act as our enemy? It is because of the past impressions of material enjoyment that are impressed within it, and the mind has got infatuated by those enjoyments. And then, not just the experience of enjoyment, but also the experiences of trouble, or the experiences of anxiety, which make a person become very overwhelmed emotionally. So essentially, we can say that the mind is affected by the modes, and a person is too conditioned by the lower modes, then choking under pressure or succumbing to temptation, that will be more relevant to devotees. So all this self-defeating emotions that come up and sometimes overcome us, they all come because the mind is infected by the lower modes, passion and ignorance. So what do? We have to get rid of those impressions. So Prabhupada says that the mind has many impressions. Sometimes those impressions just come up. And those impressions come up, one can get misled in wrong directions. So we will see in our spiritual life as sadhakas that the temptations can overpower us in two ways. One is that externally a temptation, tempting object comes, and it is so attractive that we get attracted to it and we may fall for it. The other is that internally suddenly desires come up, and when the desires come up, they catch us so strongly that although we want to resist, anichchinapi varshnaya baladivo niyojita. Arjuna describes the subjective feeling of a seeker or of an aspiring transcendentalist, that at that time the seeker is having a conflict within the heart. And the seeker doesn't want to succumb, but still, as if against one's desires, one is engaged in sin. Bala adivaniyojita. So the past impressions overwhelm us. Now, of course, we can fight back and we can resist, but at certain times, the impression is so overwhelming that it's almost impossible to resist it. So why does it happen and what can we deal with? How can we deal with it? So it happens because there is deep within and in the mind, there are impressions of our past indulgences. And just as sometimes deep within a water, fermentation happens, and then because of some chemical process, fermentation or whatever, then suddenly bubbles start coming up on the surface. So it's like that, there are desires deep in our mind and sometimes they suddenly come up, and when those impressions come, they can be very contrary to our moral and spiritual values and they can impel us to act wrongly. That's why Prabhupada says that it can create a dangerous situation. And ultimately, what we think of at the time of death is going to determine where we will go. This is called the law of last thought. And yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajyante kalevaram. Whatever we think of at the time of death, that's what we attain. So if at the time of death we suddenly think of something which is undesirable, then we may end up in an auspicious destination. Of course, the mind generally at the time of death thinks of that object in which we got the greatest shelter during our lifetime. Because death is a time of great devastation, great fear. So when there is devastation and fear, one instinctively reaches for shelter. And where will one get the shelter? That varies according to person to person. But whatever a person has experienced shelter in throughout one's life, that is what the mind will go to instinctively at the time of death. So if we have cultivated practicing Krishna consciousness throughout our life, then the mind will go towards Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, the mind will go in wrong directions. So how can the mind act as our enemy? Let us discuss that briefly over here. So before we can seriously impel ourselves to train the mind, see, we need conviction and we need commitment, we discussed in our previous class, to go from material pleasure to spiritual pleasure. So conviction is required. The mind can act as my enemy. Mind frequently does act as my enemy. And therefore, I need to deal with the mind properly. So, to understand how the mind may act as an enemy, we'll look at acronym MIND, which describes four ways in which the mind can act in inimical ways. So, look at the mind before you look with the mind. So, treat the mind as a separate person. And look at the mind before you look with the mind. What this means is, I'll look at the acronym a little later. Let's look at the title over there. This is actually a top title of a book which I hope to write in future. So look at the mind. So basically this means treat the mind as a separate person. And now, for example, if I am speaking right now, so you look at me and then you evaluate, what is this person saying? Does this statement make sense? If I am saying, look at the direction. Now normally, if we know that person, if we trust that person, we will instinctively look in that direction. But if we are driving a car and there's a neighbor says, oh, look in that, there's a person sitting next to us in the side, say, hey, look over there. Now, even if we trust the person, still, if I am holding a steering wheel, I just cannot look here and there. I have to look ahead. And I'll look ahead at the road, and then afterwards cautiously I look in that direction. And then if I don't know the person, if I'm driving a bus, and suddenly a person goes, hey, look there, somebody just comes along, I don't know that person, then if I'm doing something important, I'll not really look at that thing. I'll first look at that person. Is this person trustworthy? Is it worth it to listen to this person and look at that, whatever that person is saying? So like that, when we hear things from a particular person, right, and the person tells us to do something, first we look at that person, evaluate the credibility of that person, and then decide whether we should do what the person is suggesting. So similarly, look at the mind before you look with the mind means, when the mind speaks something, at that time we evaluate the credibility of the mind. Is this what is saying making sense? And the mind often speaks lies in four major ways. So if we are to understand what are the ways in which the mind can mislead us, so for that purpose, we need to look at the mind carefully. So by understanding, okay, these are the kind of lies that the mind speaks, then when the mind is speaking something, we can evaluate. Is it falling in these categories? If it is falling in these categories, then I won't listen to it and I will be cautious. And I will evaluate whether it is lying right now. And then if it is lying, then I won't listen. Otherwise, I can do what the mind is saying. So let's look at these four categories. And then we'll understand how the mind can trick us. Not just in spiritual life, the mind troubles and tricks us even in material life. In material life, as I said, a person who is a sports star and can hit the winning stroke at the last, in the final series, he has the capacity, the talent. But then if the person chokes, the mind, what is the mind, just overwhelms the person with so much tension, so much anxiety, so much pressure, that the person chokes and the person is not able to do at that time. So the mind can ruin us not just spiritually, the mind can ruin us even materially. And managing the mind means not only managing it at for staying focused on our spiritual goals, but say people get addicted to things. What is that addiction? That's the when they were in some trouble or when they were just wanting some pleasure, the mind misled them in a wrong direction, and then the mind kept making them go in again and again in that direction and then trapped them. So let's look at the four ways in which the mind can trouble us. So the first is M, is the mind magnifies problems. The mind magnifies problems means that when there is a trouble, the mind makes the trouble bigger than what it needs to be. How does this happen? That the mind, when it faces a problem, generally now the problem is there and we have to deal with the problem. But thinking of the problem doesn't solve the problem. Thinking of the problem, sometimes overthinking of the problem, simply makes the problem bigger and bigger, bigger than what it is, bigger than what it needs to be. And not only when we think about a problem, the problem becomes bigger in our mind, but we become smaller because we feel, oh, I can't do anything, oh, this won't work. And we become overwhelmed. So overthinking about a problem is like overcooking a rotten vegetable, hoping that it will become good. If I go to a market and somehow I am sold, I buy a rotten vegetable. Somebody just gives me a raw deal, a bad deal, and I buy a rotten vegetable. Now I'm irritated. Why did I get this rotten vegetable? So then what do? I take the rotten vegetable and I put it in my stove or my cooker on some vessel, and then I start cooking. Normal vegetable I cook for 5 minutes, but I think that, oh, this is a rotten vegetable, so I'll cook it for 25 minutes. Now, overcooking a rotten vegetable is not going to make it better. Similarly, if there is a problem, overthinking about the problem is not going to solve the problem. Certainly, we need to think about it, about how to deal with it. But that thinking has to be done with a calm, collected, composed mind. When we are in hyper-anxiety, that time when we think about a problem, the mind just goes round and round and round, and we go round and round and round. At the end, all that happens is we end up with a big headache, or we end up with tension. And we don't really do anything constructive. So if some problem is there, something has gone wrong, so then we have to understand what's happened, what's gone wrong has gone wrong, what can't be changed, but there is much that can be changed. So the present is there for me to do something constructive about, the future is there for me to do constructive things about. Let me focus on that. So the mind magnifies problems in the sense that the mind keeps our thoughts glued to some problematic situation and makes us worry, makes us lament, makes us feel morose, makes us feel depressed. And then in that way, it just drains away our energy. It sucks and saps our inner vigor and leaves us feeling very disempowered and helpless and dejected. So when a problem comes and when you start thinking too much about the problem, you should think, hey, this is the mind. It's magnifying the problems. So yes, all of us have our own problems in life. We can't deny those problems. But we also have to recognize that they're there, whatever we can, we'll do to deal with them. But just thinking about them too much is not going to solve the problems. We don't have to be problem conscious. We should stay Krishna conscious. And by being Krishna conscious, then we think calmly how to deal with the problem. So this is one way in which the mind can act as our enemy. So it is said that don't tell God how big your problems are. Tell your problems how big God is. So when we dwell on our problems, then we go to God, this problem is there, do something about it. But when we are praying to God also, actually, our thoughts are not about God, our thoughts are about the problem. So we are problem conscious, not Krishna conscious. So rather than that, we tell the problem how big God is. That means we stay Krishna conscious and know that Krishna is on our side and that the problem is there, I'll deal with it. So we shouldn't let the mind magnify problems. And you recognize, hey, this is the mind magnifying the problems. You check it. No, I will not let you trick. I will not let you fool me. I will not let you trap me. Then the mind imagines pleasures. Imagines pleasures means that the mind sees some object and then it goes into fantasy land. Thinking, oh, I'll get this object and I'll do this and I'll enjoy and I'll do this and I'll do this. And it actually just saps so much of our energy. Many people waste so much of their thought and their time and their energy daydreaming. So sometimes we are going on traveling for some program and some young people are there. You know, they are just walking along the street and suddenly they imagine they're as if throwing a ball or swinging a bat. So they're walking along the road, but they're imagining, oh, I am a famous cricketer and it's the last ball of India's match against Pakistan and I get the ball and I hit a sixer. And I become a national hero by that. So this is just daydreaming. So much of our time goes away in daydreaming. And the daydreaming can often be about either waste things, waste thoughts, or it can be about even sinful, immoral thoughts. So this sort of fantasizing is useless. And when we catch our mind doing this, then we understand, you're going to waste my time, you're going to waste my energy. I won't let this happen. So whenever the mind starts imagining pleasures, now, why shouldn't we imagine pleasures? Because if the pleasures are sinful, then even those thoughts are going to contaminate us. And the thoughts may eventually gain a momentum which may force us to do those wrong things also. But apart from that also, even if the thoughts are not sinful, but the point is that they are just distracting us towards things which are irrelevant to our essential interests. Now, the difference from daydreaming is actually a vision. Now, to have a vision, like Srila Prabhupada said, that there are temples, there are devotees, only time is separating us away from them. So that is actually vision. And that vision, when we have a vision, then we are in control. The mind is not in control. That means, this is the ultimate goal of my life and this is where I want to go. And I will keep this vision so that I can have that as inspiration and as a lighthouse for me to move in this direction. So Prabhupada was not just having a vision of there are temples. Prabhupada was working to the best of his capacity with whatever resources Prabhupada had. Even if the resources were very limited, Prabhupada was working vigorously to use those resources and to share Krishna consciousness with others. So like that, we have to be resourceful. And the more resourceful we are, the more spiritual advancement we will make. So vision means it's clearly well thought out and then we are in control when we think and shape the vision and then we are doing tangible things to move towards the vision. But most of the time the mind just sees some sense object and then just goes into a fantasy spin thinking about how will I get this object and I'll enjoy. So that is such a waste of mental energy. And then actually when the mind imagines pleasures, along with that, it magnifies problems also. For example, I'm going along, I have a car, and I'm going along with a car, and then suddenly, I see the latest car that has come. So then the mind says, oh, I want that car. And then we think, how can I get that car? I'll have to take it, it's so expensive, I'll have to take a loan. What do I do with this car? Should I sell it? How much will I get for it? And if I purchase that car, then yes, people will look at me. Oh, when I walk along, then mouths will fall open, eyes will become wide. So nice. But then, think, I'll have to take a loan. Should I take a loan? Oh, but if I get a raise in my salary, it'll be so good. Maybe I should take some other job. Or maybe I should take a lottery. If I just win the lottery, then I can purchase the car without any tension of loan also. So like that, the mind just takes in so many thoughts which are useless. So often, the point is that we have to have our priorities clear. My priority is to love and serve Krishna and to return back to Krishna. That doesn't mean that I have to live in poverty in this world. But by continuously fantasizing about things which are not really important for me, I get some passing thoughts and start fantasizing about them. So much of my mental energy gets wasted. And so what happens is when I have this kind of fantasies and I don't get those objects, then that weakens me, disheartens me. I want that, but I don't get it. I want that, but I don't get it. What should I do? What should I do? What should I do? And then we become discouraged by that. We become de-energized by that. We become irritated by that sometimes. So imagine pleasure. So as soon as the mind starts going on imagination drive, pack, check it. Stop it. We don't have to become the cheerleaders of our mind. What are cheerleaders? Somebody else is performing and there are cheerleaders who are dancing to cheer that. So sometimes the mind just thinks, oh, I'll do this. And we say, very good, very good, very good. No, we don't have to be cheerleaders of the mind. We have to be the controllers of the mind. And they decide, you go in this direction, you don't go in this direction. So when the mind goes on fantasy drive, we just check it and bring it back. So it's imagining things. And third is, the mind neglects opportunities. So M-I-N-D. So N is neglects opportunities. So how does the mind neglect opportunities? The present is all that we have and all that we will ever have. The present means the moment right now. This is all that we have. And what has happened in the past is gone. We can't do anything about what has happened in the past. And what is there in the future, that is not in our control right now. We can't do anything about what is in the future also. If we are to do anything in our life, that will have to be done in the present. Yes, in the future I say I'll do some things, but when will I be able to do it in the future? When the future becomes the present. So the present is all that we have and all that we will ever have. We'll never have anything more than the present. So the mind neglects opportunities in many ways, but one of the primary ways is that the mind distracts our thoughts towards the past or towards the future. And thereby, the opportunity that is there at hand in the present, the mind neglects that. And not only that, we have some things which we can do right now. There are issues over which we can work and we can improve ourselves, we can improve the situation, we can improve our prospects. But the mind neglects that and goes into thinking, oh, this is wrong, that is wrong, only if this were like this, only if this were like that. And in that way, the mind neglects opportunities. So in our spiritual life also, with respect to this past, apart from this past and future, so now we can learn from the past and we can prepare for the future, but this should be done when we are in the mode of goodness and when we are in control of our mind. Then we take the mind behind and think, okay, what can I do? How can I learn from this? And similarly, when we are in control of the mind, we go towards the future. Okay, in the future I can do these things. But if we are not in control, if the mind is in control, then we just do lamentation or we do fantasizing. And neither of them are useful. So we have to be in control of the mind. The mind will make us neglect so many opportunities. Generally, the mind makes us live as if life is a practice run for next time. That means I have to do something right now. This is just a practice run. Not very important. The future, what I do will be important. No, the present moment is important. This is true in material life. Actually, whatever we call as practice run, that prepares us for the eventual run. But in spiritual life, actually, every moment is important. Because every moment, Krishna is there in our heart. And every moment, we have an opportunity to remember Krishna. Every moment, we have an opportunity to go closer to Krishna by the choices that we make. Whether we stay God-conscious or we stay God-unconscious. So therefore, when we understand that every moment is important, every moment is precious, then we ensure that we don't let the mind neglect opportunities. And the mind, even in our practice of spiritual life, we have to see what are our opportunities and focus on them. okay, this is what I can do well, this is what I can do well, let me do these things. But the mind always makes us think, oh, I can't do that, I didn't do that. You see, how the mind tricks us is, if we are doing some service, the mind says, oh, you're not studying scriptures, you're not chanting the holy names, you're not doing things properly. What is the use of service? But then when we are chanting, the mind makes us think, oh, you're not doing service, you're just chanting. In chanting, you're saying you should, oh, Krishna, please engage me in your service. But when you get service, you don't do service well. What is the use? And so similarly, the nature of the mind is, it always thinks about what it doesn't have and makes us dissatisfied. So we shouldn't succumb to this. So when I'm chanting, I just focus on chanting. Don't bother about what all services I have to do. Don't bother about other things. Just focus on chanting. Similarly, when we are studying, see how the mind travels, or the special scriptural study is, that often the mind says, oh, I don't get time to study. I don't get time to study. I don't get time to study. But when we get time to study, the mind says, last night you did not sleep enough, you know, you should sleep now. So what happens is, the mind just doesn't want to work hard at the thing that is there at hand. So rather than focusing on the thing that is there at hand, the mind takes the path of least resistance, the easy way out, by complaining about the problems that are, the things that are wrong in my life. Oh, I don't get time to study, I don't get time to study. Okay, whatever time I get to study scripture, let me study scripture in that time. And if I use that time properly, I show Krishna my sincerity, Krishna will give me the intelligence to make more time. And Krishna will even change my circumstances so that I'll get more time. So we want more time for our various activities, but lamenting about that doesn't solve the problems. So whatever is at hand, we do that. And when we do that, and what happens is, and whatever is not in our hands, Krishna takes care of that. So neglects opportunities means, it's, there are certain things which are in our control and there are certain things which are not in our control. So when we focus on what we can change, by that we show Krishna the sincerity of our intentions, and then Krishna helps us face that which can't be changed, or Krishna may even change that which we can't change. But we should, if we just focus on that which we can't change, then we simply disempower ourselves. We simply weaken ourselves. And then we lose the opportunity to change the things which we could have changed. So I can't make sure that I'll chant all my 16 rounds attentively. But I can try my best to chant this mantra attentively. So if we focus on what we can change, that is the opportunity that is there for us at each moment. We do that, and then in the future, other things also progressively will change. So rather than thinking, oh, I don't get time to study the philosophy. Okay, right now I'm studying. Right now I'm hearing a class. Right now let me hear attentively. And if I keep hearing attentively like this, then gradually, I will be able to build my understanding. And over a period of months and years, I will have a wonderful scriptural understanding. Deep, systematic, coherent. That's how it all come. But it all has to do one step at a time. So we shouldn't neglect the opportunity that we have. So what does the mind do? Mind makes us think about all the things that are wrong in our life and doesn't allow us to focus on the things which we can do, which we can change. And the D is, the mind denies realities. Denies realities means that the mind refuses to acknowledge that the problem is with itself. The reality is that the mind may say, oh, Krishna doesn't care, Krishna is just happy performing pastimes, I'm struggling over here, Krishna doesn't help me. The mind comes up with three kinds of falsities where it's denial of reality. One is, it blames Krishna, oh, Krishna doesn't help. Or it may say, oh, this chanting doesn't work, this process of bhakti yoga is not powerful enough. I've been chanting for so long, nothing happens. And the third kind of denial is that, oh, I'm too fallen. I am so fallen that nothing is, there's no hope for me. So all these are falsities which the mind is inducing us to believe, and it is denying the reality. What is the reality? The reality is that Krishna loves us. Krishna loves us so much that He's there in our heart waiting for us to turn towards Him. And He's waiting for so many lifetimes. And the reality is that bhakti is supremely potent. We just have to practice bhakti enthusiastically. And the reality also is that Nobody is so fallen that bhakti cannot elevate them. To think that I am so fallen that even Krishna cannot elevate me is perverse false ego. See, normal false ego is to think I am so great. Perverse false ego is to think that I am so fallen. But either way, it's false ego only because it's I-centeredness. True ego is Krishna-centeredness. I am a servant of Krishna, let me serve Krishna. So I-centeredness is I am like this. So I am so good is one kind of false ego. And I am so bad is perverse false ego. So actually, we don't want any kind of false ego. We want true ego. True ego is I am a servant of Krishna and let me serve Krishna. So the mind denies reality. What is the reality? The reality is that there is opportunity. I have to just take the opportunity and I can make spiritual advancement. I can change myself. I can become a better devotee. That is the reality. The reality is that the problem is in the mind. The mind itself is the problem. You know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are two nuns, Brahmanas. There's one Avadhut Brahmana, which is talked about in 7th canto, whose teachings are talked about in 7th canto. And then there's Avanti Brahmana, who is talked about by Lord Krishna in his teachings to Uddhava in the 11th canto. And in this Avanti Brahmana, he says that he faces a lot of problems in life. And at the end, he says that ultimately, the cause of all my problems is the mind. So the mind plays the blame game and denies the reality. Mind says, oh, God is the problem. This process is the problem. I myself is the problem. And the mind means, I means not mind is not saying I is the problem. He says, you are the problem. Mind says, you are so fallen that you cannot be elevated. No. The problem is the mind is having a discouragement. Mind is having disorientation, misdirection. So if you purify the mind, actually speaking, we can all make spiritual advancement. So it denies, ultimately the ultimate denial is, the mind denies the reality that we are suffering in material existence. Yes, there is this problem, this problem, this problem, but the mind denies that the material existence itself is a problem. That material existence itself is a state of misery and one has to get out of material existence. That the mind doesn't accept. The mind doesn't accept the fact that we are all going to die. Although we accept at one level that life is temporary and we are going to die, but somehow the mind makes us think, oh, death is not going to happen today or tomorrow. It's a long time away for you. Until then, you can do a lot of things. The mind denies the reality that it can come any time, and therefore, that which is most important for us, that should also be made the most urgent for us. So, when we talk about it, the reality of death, that is not to make us paranoid. Hey, I'm walking along, some terrorist may explode a bomb and I may die. Oh. Death is not meant to make us fearful and trembling, and that is not the purpose of thinking about death. The purpose of thinking about death is to make us raise our consciousness from the material to the spiritual and to make us seriously practice the process of spiritual life by which we can rise to the spiritual level of consciousness. So death is also a reality, and when we acknowledge it seriously, then we get an impetus to turn towards Krishna through that. So these are all the ways in which the mind can mislead us. And in fact, not just can mislead us, the mind has been misleading us like this for many lifetimes. And when we recognize the mind has been acting as my enemy, then we get the conviction, no longer will I be cheated by the mind. No longer will I be fooled by the mind. Enough is enough. Now, I'm going to be intelligent, I'm going to be shrewd. And whenever the mind tries to trick me, I'll identify and I will check the trick. So actually, the more we chant Hare Krishna attentively, the more we study the philosophy, the more we rise to the goodness, the mode of goodness, and we rise towards transcendence. And then we can catch the mind. When the mind starts playing its tricks, mind starts taking us in wrong directions, then hey, this is the mind acting. I will not let it trick me. So in that way, we can check the mind. So it's extremely important for us as sadhakas to learn to control the mind. And how do we control the mind? We control the mind, first of all, it begins by recognizing that the mind is going out of control. That the mind is tricking me. When I understand that, then I can bring the mind under control. Now, moving forward, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that, so he says that yes, we have to control the mind. The process of controlling the mind is by practicing devotional service. And while practicing devotional service, in this purport, or in this verse also, Rupa Goswami recommends that we go to Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, practice devotional service under a Vrajavasi. So at one level, this is talking about Raganuga Bhakti. So actually there is Raganuga and Ragatmika Bhakti. We'll discuss about this elaborately in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is also written by Rupa Goswami. So here, what is being talked about primarily is that we have to make spiritual advancement. And how do we, for making spiritual advancement, we need models. So a devotee who is absorbed in love for Krishna, when we get the example of that devotee and model ourselves on that devotee, then we make tangible spiritual advancement. So ideally, in the Bhakti Samson, we will discuss, this is being just referred to, tad anuragi jana anugami. What this means is that devotees are very advanced when they understand that in the spiritual swarupa, that okay, actually this is my swarupa. When they get that understanding, then they understand, okay, my spiritual leader, for example, say somebody, when we have swarupa siddhi at a very advanced stage of spiritual life, then we will understand that, okay, this is my swarupa, and then my leader is, say, Lalita Devi. Lalita Sakhi is the leader of my group. And I'm meant to serve under her. And then she has a particular mood, and I want to assist in that mood. So then, Tashtan Raje Tadanuragi Jana Anugami. So the mood in which she is serving Krishna, one meditates on that, and one assimilates that mood, internalizes that mood, and then serves Krishna in that mood. So these are very advanced stages of devotion. And although they are described by our acharyas in literature like say in very many books which are called as, you have the common title of Smarana Paddhati. So Gauranga Gaura Smarana Paddhati, Krishna Smarana Paddhati. Acharyas like say Gopal Guru Goswami and others have described this. But from the time of Bhakti Vinod Thakur and especially from the time of Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, they have described that this Raga Marga is very exalted. And we can't prematurely rush into Raga Marga. So we focus on practicing Vaidhi Bhakti. So we'll discuss about all this in Bhakti Samrita Sindhu. But the point is, for us, Tad Anuragi Jana Anugami, that is refers to Srila Prabhupada. That Srila Prabhupada is attached to Krishna, and Srila Prabhupada enabled all of us to become attracted to Krishna. So some devotees feel that Srila Prabhupada did not talk too much about advanced pastimes of Vrindavan, of Krishna and Radharani. So has Srila Prabhupada actually given us the esoteric Gaudiya teachings? Actually, Srila Prabhupada has given us the process by which we can get all those esoteric Gaudiya teachings also in our spiritual gradual spiritual advancement. But the esoteric Gaudiya teachings, the real Gaudiya mood is not just of remembering Radha and Krishna. Remembering Radha Krishna is important. But more important than just remembering Radha Krishna is remembering Radha Krishna in a way that is pleasing to them. In a way that is pleasing to them. Now, if we just prematurely meditate on the intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna, then that can degrade us. We'll discuss about this later. But Srila Prabhupada is tad anuragi jana anugami in the sense that he assimilated the mood of selfless service. The mood of selfless service is what specializes the Vrajvas, what is the distinctive characteristic of the Vrajvasis. So the gopis were ready to go to hell for all of eternity just to relieve Krishna's headache for one moment. That is the exalted nature of their love for Krishna. And we see that mood of selfless sacrifice and service in Srila Prabhupada. That Srila Prabhupada was happily living in Vrindavan as a sannyasi. That was the perfection of life which most people aspire for. Most people who are religiously inclined, they know that retiring to Vrindavan and staying in Vrindavan is going to a holy place like that and staying there is a way to perfect one's life. Because one stays in the final days of one's life in a spiritual, vibrant atmosphere. By that, the chances of one's remembering Krishna at the time of death increase. And if one remembers Krishna at the time of death, one goes back to Krishna. So, and actually many pious Hindus think of doing this, but they never get the courage to do this only. So Vanaprastha and Sannyas, many people are not able to practice that seriously also. So Srila Prabhupada had already done that. He had left his home and gone to Vrindavan, and he could have attained perfection there. But Srila Prabhupada gave it all up. Just as the bridge, just as the gopis, when Krishna called them, the gopis gave up their home and they went to Krishna. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada took the instruction of a spiritual master, preach in the English language, preach all over the world. And taking that instruction, Srila Prabhupada traveled everywhere. At the age, advanced age of 69, he went to America. And last 12 years of his life, vigorously, tirelessly preaching. He exhibited through his actions the mood of selfless sacrifice. That is the essence of Vrindavan. And by that, he has attracted so many people to Krishna's lotus feet. So what we get from Srila Prabhupada is that mood of selfless sacrifice. And if we internalize that mood, we will make rapid spiritual advancement. Srila Prabhupada said that, how do we enter into Radha Krishna Bhakti, into intimate mood of Radha Krishna? By being their selfless servants. And that's why Srila Prabhupada said that by assisting in the Krishna consciousness movement, doing various different kinds of services, by this we are making spiritual advancement and gradually we will enter into the advanced pastimes by this. So first, just by contemplating on those advanced pastimes, we can't enter into them. We have to cultivate the right mood. And that right mood comes by purification. And Srila Prabhupada has given us preaching, he has given us sadhana, he has given us the temples, the sangha. By all this, we become purified. And the more we become purified, the more we make spiritual advancement by that. So therefore, this is the process of purification that we aspire for. We should aspire to follow. And if we aspire to follow this process of purification systematically, then the advanced stages of devotion will gradually, progressively manifest. So we focus on internalizing what Srila Prabhupada has given us. So he is the Tadanurag Jananugami, who is our model. And he is the model for all ISKCON devotees. Now for ISKCON devotees, we have our spiritual master also. But we have to understand that our spiritual master is not independent of Srila Prabhupada. Our spiritual master is representing Srila Prabhupada to us. So Prabhupada's mercy comes to us in many ways. It comes to us, one way is through our spiritual master. Another central way for all ISKCON devotees is that it comes through Srila Prabhupada's books. So another way is that it comes through the ISKCON managerial structure, through the GBC. So all these three, the spiritual master, the books of Srila Prabhupada, and the managerial institutional structure of ISKCON, or through all these, we are getting Srila Prabhupada's mercy. They are all there by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. And Srila Prabhupada himself is giving us the mercy of the previous acharyas, ultimately, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna. So, when we internalize Srila Prabhupada's teachings and follow them faithfully, then tad anuragi jananugami. So, all ISKCON devotees are actually following Srila Prabhupada. And that's how they are becoming Tadanuragi Jananugami. They are internalizing this instruction. And now Tishtan Vrajet is said, one should live in Vrindavan. So does this mean that Rupa Goswami is saying everybody should leave everything else that they are doing and come to live in Vrindavan? No. We see that Rupa Goswami himself taught Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami taught, he had his Shiksha disciple, Srinivasa Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, and Shaman Pandit. Now all of those three had been, they had been mostly from Bengal Orissa area, and they had been sent by the disciples to be trained through Jiva Goswami. So when they will be trained by Jiva Goswami, after training them, what did Jiva Goswami tell them? Go back to Bengal and Orissa and preach. And actually for them, they had come to Vrindavan, they were studying under Jiva Goswami, and they were so satisfied in there. But when they were told, leave Vrindavan and go, they were at one level aghast. Now when will we again see Vrindavan? When will we see our beloved spiritual teacher? But that instruction actually led to the tremendous expansion of Gaudiya Vaishnavism in Bengal and Orissa. Because all three were very powerful preachers. And they created, not only preached themselves, but they created a legacy of preachers. So the point is, Jiva Goswami was initiated by Rupa Goswami in many ways. He was like the primary intellectual successor of Rupa Goswami. And now he told his disciples, his Siksha disciples, to leave Vrindavan. So is he defying it over here? Tishtan Vraja, it is being said. So yes, one has to understand that Vraja is not just a place, it's also a mood. So Srila Prabhupada, did he leave Vrindavan when in 1965 he went to America? Srila Prabhupada did not leave Vrindavan. Now, actually speaking, Srila Prabhupada carried Vrindavan in his heart. And wherever he establishes con centers, he replicated Vrindavan over there. And has given us the knowledge by which we can keep replicating Vrindavan. Now, we can take a devotee out of Vrindavan, but we cannot take Vrindavan out of a devotee. We cannot take Vrindavan out of a devotee. That means a devotee's heart is always at Krishna's lotus feet, thinking about Krishna's message, thinking about Krishna's mission, thinking about Krishna. These are also ways in which we are thinking about Krishna only. And Srila Prabhupada is always thinking about Krishna's message and Krishna's mission, and he was fulfilling that. So that fulfilling Krishna's mission is actually the essential thing which all the Vrajavasis are doing. So that is what Srila Prabhupada has taught us to do also. So the mission that the Vrajavasis are fulfilling may be different from the mission that we are fulfilling. The mission is that they are all participating in Krishna's pastimes and they want to fulfill Krishna's specific desires within his pastimes. But the mission which we are fulfilling is also the mission which Lord Krishna has given through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is that, you know, spread the holy name into every town and village. Become Krishna conscious, learn to love Krishna. So this is all the mission that the Lord has given, and fulfilling it is the way we will make spiritual advancement. So the way we live in Vraja is not necessarily by leaving home and going to Vrindavan, or leaving our specific temple and going to Vrindavan, but it is by internalizing the mood of selfless service and dedicating ourselves to fulfilling Krishna's mission and practicing and sharing Krishna's message through our own lives and through our contributions. Our life itself is the greatest contribution, but through our lives and through our services that we do, through our services, that means we live as exemplary devotees in our family, in our community, in the broader society, we set a good example. And by that, we don't just restrict Vrindavan to a particular place, but we spread the mood of Vrindavan wherever we go. Tishtan Vraje. Now, this Kramani Rasana Manasiniyojya, it is described Kramena, progressively. One engages one's tongue and then one engages one's mind. And then one becomes absorbed. So, Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, in his writings, quotes certain things which Srila Prabhupada also elaborates. So, let's look at what Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur says. He talks about four stages basically. There is Shravana Dasha, there is Varana Dasha, there is Smarana Dasha, and there is Sampatti Dasha. So, what are these dashas? Shravana Dasha refers to stage when we are hearing the philosophy. So first we hear the philosophy, and by hearing the philosophy we gradually move forward. So in the neophyte stage one should always engage in, this is called Shravandasa, the stage of hearing. So this is what is most important for us to do. So Srila Prabhupada has given us Krishna Conscious Movement, and there are Bhagavatam classes, there are outreach programs, and now through internet there is so much opportunity for hearing it, wherever we are. Then gradually one starts internalizing, that is called the Vanate. By constantly hearing, one attains the Varana Dasha. Varana means then one is internalizing this. So one is theoretically here, the second is to internalize, assimilate it. So Varana Dasha. So after Varana, then there is a Smarana. So Prabhupada explains over there that what happens is when remembrance is uninterrupted, it is called as Anusmriti. When one attains Smarana Dasha, so it becomes concentrated as meditation, and then eventually when this Smarana improves, then at that stage you can perfectly and clearly understand the relationship with Krishna, that is Sampatti Dasha, that is the perfection of life. So what does Sampatti Dasha refer to? Sampatti Dasha refers to actually our coming to know what who we are in the spiritual world, attaining and ascending a Swarupa and turning back to Swarupa. But all this is progressive. So it all begins with Shravana. So when we hear, we regularly, we have to give hearing an adequately important priority in our spiritual life. So when we keep hearing regularly, then gradually our subtle body becomes Krishnaized by that hearing. Because what we hear goes inside and it stays inside. So that is the Varanadasha, when our spiritual body starts getting spiritualized. When you keep thinking about Krishna more and more, that is Varanadasha. And then after Varanadasha, then once we accept it, we remember it more and more, then we go to actually Smaranadasha. So that remembrance becomes habitual. And then after that, there's Sampatti. So these are all progressive stages. And by this, we will all make spiritual advancement. So what the process of Krishna consciousness we have been given, if we just practice it diligently, then all these exalted levels of consciousness will be revealed to us. And that's how we'll make steady spiritual advancement. So what is the Upadesha Sara? Krameena, progressively. Progressively engage the tongue and engage the mind. Under the guidance of exalted devotee and by imbibing the mood of Vrindavan. And by that one can attain perfection. Thank you very much. Shri Upadesha Amrit Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.